Happy Friday, guys, and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Dubs. I'm your host, Bill T. Well, when you hear my voice, you know what time it is, and it's Friday. Early morning or afternoon, whenever you're deciding to listen to this podcast, but we've got the latest and greatest stuff that's happening in the VW scene, and we track those people down and bring their story to you. So today's podcast, I'm pretty excited to bring to you because it's Pat Downs, formerly with CB Performance, the engine builder over there for years and years. About a year ago, Pat left and started his own thing. So we're going to get into that, why Pat left, what's going on with his new company, and all that good stuff. But before we get into that, make sure you support our sponsors, VW Trends Magazine, a magazine for the people, by the people, and also Ross Wolf, purveyors of speed and performance for your vintage Volkswagen. Go on their website today, pick out some cool stuff, some jewelry for your Volkswagen, performance parts built by enthusiasts for enthusiasts. So go check them out today at rosswolf.com. Now, this podcast I'm pretty excited to get into because Pat and I have been talking since just before he left CB. We were talking. I wanted to do a follow-up podcast because he really got into the weeds on engine building, and a lot of people just love that podcast. It's one of my higher listened to podcasts. Because I know a lot of you guys listen to things back and forth with respect to gaining some knowledge about performance, engine building, and all that good stuff. So I'm excited to get Pat back on the podcast. So we got a lot to talk about, the change and what's going on with Pat Downs Performance, which is his new company. So I'm excited to get into that. Lots of stuff happening in the next couple weeks. If you haven't checked out my YouTube channel, go subscribe today. While you're at it, subscribe to George's YouTube channel at The Wagon. He does really thorough how-tos, and I do monkey business, lifestyle, fun stuff, and some nonsense road trips. And we just started a series about my Ghia. I also have one more series that's going to be kicking off, but the one that's going to be starting about my Ghia is specifically the restoration of Zorba the Ghia. Now, that car, to give you a heads up, the video should be out by the time you guys listen to this podcast. And I got the bright idea. Well, I didn't get the bright idea. I was influenced by Andy the Paint, who happened to be at my shop here for the one crazy weekend. And he looked at me and he says, dude, send me this car. I'll get this car done in a couple months for you. It's just so close. And I'm like, yeah, this, that time. The moons and stars aligned up. Russell had a container going over. There was some room. That's my boy, Russell Ritchie. And so that ended up happening there. So check out the video, see what's going on, and let's just see how rust-free this Type 34 is. So go check that out on my YouTube channel. Also, when you're at work, if you can't listen to the podcast, but you can stream it on your computer, you can also listen to it on YouTube as well. So I've got audio versions of the podcast and all kinds of other cool stuff. So that's what we're getting into. In addition to that, we've also got the Milwaukee Miracle coming up, and that's going to be sponsored by Impy. I've got a GTV bug that we found. It's on the GTV Addicts page, and one of the guys, Mike Mays, threw it up for sale. I looked at it. I thought, here's something I don't need. And so I started chatting with him, and we worked out a deal. I picked up the car, needed some rocker replacement, and he's working on that. And where better to go than to replace those parts with Impy parts? So Impy has decided to come on board and help support with some parts and pieces that we need for that. So we'll be doing a video series on the Milwaukee Miracle, the 1970 GTV bug that was found by Mike Mays. And now he's putting it together for me. We've had the motor rebuilt, and we're going to do a video breakdown on that one as well. So go subscribe today to the YouTube channel. We'll also do a podcast probably coming up with Mike as well. So anyway, I'm excited to bring that information to you and more excited to let you guys know that we're ready to kick off this podcast. So Pat Downs with Pat Downs Performance on Let's Talk Dubs.
You probably don't know that there's a new Volkswagen out that doesn't look like a Volkswagen. It's got everything that people who like the bug like.
Pat, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So, Pat, the last time we did a podcast, it was over probably 2 years ago. And at the time you were at CB Performance, and we, you know, interestingly enough, your podcast is one of the higher downloaded podcasts because we got real deep in the weeds about engine building and all that kind of stuff. And guys that like the technical stuff, they just go back and re-listen and re-listen. So yours, Fred Simpson's, a lot of guys that get real technical in the weeds have become some of the higher listened to podcasts. So you're in the top five downloaded podcasts for sure. So
it
was awesome. It was a lot of information, and there have been big changes about since then. And maybe the biggest thing, we'll talk about the elephant in the room, is after 35 years at CB Performance, you decided to leave and start Pat Down Performance. Did you want to talk about any bit of that?
It was a hard decision to make. The CB crew was like family to me, and but it was time. I always wanted to have my own business, but having kids, you have the stability of having a paycheck every week, and it was a gamble to leave earlier in my career. So I chose to stay, and it was a great experience working at CB. It was 35 years of just having fun, developing products, worked with some amazing people, but it was time for me. It was time for Pat. I wanted to develop some of my own products under my name and just be my own boss. That's everybody's dream, is to be your own boss. And at 50, I think I was 57 years old when I left. So it was scary, man. I think anybody that leaves a job that you've been at for a long time would be lying if they didn't say it was a scary thing to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a scary thing. And I took it on myself earlier when I left, a steady paycheck and decided to start my own company. I think I was 26, and my biggest fear, my attitude was like, I don't have any kids right now. Now's the time to make or break it, right? Like, I kind of did it from a different end, and it's a scary thing. But I also think when you have your own business, fear is a good motivator. You know what I mean?
Fear is an awesome motivator.
and I think and like, okay, it's all me now. No safety net. I got to make this happen. And so that's one of the things, for me in my life has been constantly pushing me to do things. And looking back now, how long have you been gone now? And Pat Down's Performance has been around how long?
I left the end of 2021. So it's been a little over 2 years.
Yeah. And then, and how was it like the transitioning to like, okay, well, I don't have any place to be and I don't have anybody looking over my shoulder, and have you always been kind of self-motivated, self-starter kind of guy?
Yeah. I kind of was my own boss out at CB. I mean, there was the owners there that ran the company, but I kind of did my own thing. Wow, I forgot what I was going to tell you. I was going to go back. Oh, yeah, the fear, I always thought I did a really good job at CB as far as the quality of my work. But when you're working under your own name, I'm just speaking for me. I'm sure it's right for other people also. But just for me, I increased the quality because now – I can't fall back on CB if there's an issue. It falls back on me and it looks bad on me. So, the quality of what I'm putting out as far as parts and engines and my machine work is higher than it's ever been.
Now, is that because you have the ultimate control and you're looking at it as you don't have to do 10,000 of them, you're doing one of these. And if you're going to do one or a dozen, you got to make sure they're the best. So you can take the time, you can slow down the schedule. You don't have the pressure of all the things where it's like, well, it's the best we're going to get for right now. Nobody else makes better. Or are you on the lookout for, like, I mean, because obviously when you're running a multifaceted business that's got several employees, overhead, all that kind of stuff, it's different, right? You got to kind of be in the middle of everything. Okay, we can't stop on this for that, you know. And
yeah, as much as you try to pound into an employee's head, you know, quality is what we're after. You have to do this job perfect every time. You know, it really comes down to the employee and how serious they take it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with me, you know, just working by myself, yeah, I control it now. And I'm not saying we did bad work at CB. I mean, the guys in the machine shop were amazing. They did great work. It's just, you know, there are mistakes that happen, and just depending on the employee, if they want to bring that to your attention or whatever, you know, sometimes it gets through. But yeah, I know when I make a mistake.
Well, yeah, you know, I had that pep talk with my team this morning, I guess if you could call it a pep talk, where I just said, if we're a team, we're not just like, I'm just getting it off my desk and it's going to the next person can deal with it. You know what I mean? It's one of these things where it's like, we're concerned about the next person in line getting it and that they get the absolute best. And sometimes people just, it's human nature that people just kind of, they just kind of look out for self-preservation, what they're working on, and their sphere, their world tends to get real small in their vision. And that's the tough thing as a business owner, right? As a business owner, that's what I deal with employees and stuff, is like, try, instead of the guys, you know, at odds with each other, it's like, guys, I need you guys to look out for each other and realize the bigger picture. Like, we're all under one name as a company. Let's all do the best work so we don't have anything come back. So I had a pep talk with my team this morning about that kind of stuff. And it's just, I think when you get a group of people together, there's just this dynamic sometimes that happens. It's really difficult to maintain with a group of people to keep everybody working at 110%. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of it comes down to, management, you know, how you manage employees and how they respect you. You know, I noticed that, you know, the machine shop, I didn't have a lot to do with other parts of CB, but the machine shop, I worked a lot with, cause I was in there and they had, the employees in the shop had a lot of respect for me. So when I asked them or confronted them on an issue, they would take it to heart and, you know, we would get it fixed.
Yeah. And so now that your main thing with Pat Downs Performance, now you've got your website up, patdownsperformance.com, and you've got stuff available for sale, things, you know, building engines is your main thing, right? Building a lot of motors and that, which is what you were known for. What are you doing this for? So obviously you have to go to outside resources now for machine work.
I do some machine work here in house, mostly cylinder head work. You know, a lot of people know my passion is cylinder heads. Mm-hmm. It's just such a black science that I just love it. So I do cylinder head work. Not a lot of money in cylinder head work for right. The amount of time you put in it, but it's fun for me. Do a lot of engine assembly, some machine work on engines, balancing, boring cases, full flow. You know, I'm not set up yet to do case clearancing. Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. I farm that out, but eventually I will be doing that. It's just, you know, I have to go slow because I can't get overwhelmed with everything and start falling behind.
Well, and also part of the challenge that you have when you become like a one-man operation, it's like you can only produce so much and keep the quality where it needs to be. And then when you bring in another person, now some of your time has to be committed to inspecting their work to make sure that they're delivering to the same level, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I probably will be getting an employee or two, down the road. And you know, yeah, you do have to train them, which takes you away, and you do have to watch watch them. But I think once you get an employee up to speed with the way you do things, because that's, I'm a stickler that they do something my way because it's worked for 37 years.
Right.
And yeah, I'm not too concerned about watching over them after I get someone trained, but yeah, eventually I'm going to have a couple employees. I can't do it all on my own.
Well, I also think there's also the aspect of finding people that are actually trainable, because some, you know, to actually do machine work, things like that, you have to have the right type of temperament to be a certain type of person, you know, because listen, the only machine work I had, I'd put on a lathe, a bus horn button, like the center of the bus steering wheel to modify, a steering wheel to fit an aftermarket wheel to fit on a bus, you know, because there's not a lot of adapters that they make, and the steering wheels they make are kind of terrible. Yeah. And I spent at my buddy's shop, the Beetle Barn. He had an old lathe, and he's like, "Here, just chuck it up in that, and machine it." He gave me the 5-minute rundown. Man, after 30 minutes, I was ready to pull my hair out. I'm like, "Dude, this takes forever, man." I'm like, "This is way too patient work for me." Like, you got to have the right kind of, you know, it able to just get in that Zen mode where you can just find your process, get in your groove, and just kind of work with it. So that's the other thing, is finding the right person that can do it, you know?
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And they're out there, you know, it's sad to say, it's a dying profession. Kids just aren't, you know, there's not the shop classes. There used to be machine shop classes in high school, and it's sad, you know, a lot of kids don't even know how to hold a wrench anymore.
Yeah, it is pretty disappointing.
It sure is.
So now with Pat Downs Performance, you're doing mostly, what has been keeping you the business? Any surprises with respect to, like, I thought I'd be doing more of this and less of that, and I'm actually doing more of that and less of this. So what was your interpretation before you started this, and then versus, like, now you're in it, you're going on 2 years now doing this. What's your look back on it?
Well, my product line is doing really well, and I was a little surprised that it would catch on as quick as it has. My distributors are just doing awesome. I don't have any really huge issues. I've had a few ignition coil problems, which I traced down to the nuts on the terminals were loose. So I've fixed that problem. But yeah, out of, I think, I forgot how many I've sold. It's a lot. I haven't had one distributor returned. Probably 1,600 sold and not one returned.
Wow. That's a lot of distributors. And then I see also on your website, you've got, cause that's a big thing I've heard. You've got the Clevite bearings for the main bearings for the motor. I've watched people so many times building motors, and they go, "I have to go through 8 sets of bearings to make a full set, or 4 sets or whatever."
Now, yeah, it's awful what's happened with the main bearing market.
So what is the cause of that? Is it that the you can't get consistency out of the bearings themselves?
It's mostly the split center bearing is the issue. I don't know what happened with Silverline. You know, when they first came out with the bearings, they were great, and then, you know, more and more companies started to carry them, and I think the production level got up high, and the quality control fell off. So I have one customer, I'll say his name. It's Vintage Motor Cars down in Hawaiian Gardens. He builds the replica 356 Porsches. And I build him, oh my gosh, probably 100 long blocks a year.
Yeah.
And I couldn't build the engines because of this bearing issue. And I had Mike Herbert from Rancho at my shop one day, and I showed him these Clevite bearings I had found. And I said, "Man," I said, "I bought everything they had, and I'm going to go through these things in a month." And he said, "Well, you should just call them." And anyway, I was able to buy a large quantity. In fact, I bought everything the factory had.
Right.
And because they said they're not going to produce the bearing anymore. Right. And I'm like, well, if you're not going to produce it, then, you know, I want to buy a bunch. So I have a good stock of those bearings. And, you know, I do. And there's another issue that, you know, in the market where there's not a good Chevy rod bearing, a 2-inch Buick Chevy rod bearing anymore. Clevite went to the, you know, the non-steel back rod bearing. And so I started narrowing the ACL, you know, race bearing for customers. And I do those quite often. It's not my favorite job to do, but I do a lot of rod bearing sets.
So the rod bearings, you have to custom make every set?
Yeah, you have to take that bearing and narrow it so it fits the early Buick Chevy bearing or journal width.
So that's the same as the, like, the, when they say Chevy rods, that's what they're talking about. It's like an early style Chevy rod that fits. That's,
yeah. Yeah, the 283, 327 rod bearing. That's what is, you know, the standard in the VW industry for our rods.
And now, were you able to talk to Clevite and say, listen, you would fire these up and keep making these? Or they're just kind of like, you bought the last, are they still going to be making them eventually?
They told me they're not going to make them anymore. So I think we're going to have to just really press on Silverline to, you know, improve the. Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, let's just make a bearing. Well, I was part of the development team at CB when we made the King flange bearing. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the hardest things I was ever involved with, was trying to develop that bearing, because King would not give us a sample. And it, you know, our prints had to be perfect on that bearing. And I don't know why they wouldn't give us a sample, but they're like, no, we're going to make you. I think we had to buy, gosh, 500 sets of bearings without having a sample. And no bearing company will make you a full circle bearing. They all want to make split bearings, really? Which, you know, we have one full circle bearing that, you know, you can't make a split on. And so, yeah, it's not an easy thing to make main bearings, especially when everybody wants a different size. It's just an awful deal.
Yeah, that's it's again, the challenges with Volkswagens, right? It's like there's so many, so many different variables for engine combinations, and so many people are trying to, you know, reuse things that it's like, who's looking for a standard 30 crank cut bearing? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. So yeah, they're trying to resurrect old engine cases because of the cost of parts nowadays. And you've got, you know, 20, 40, 60, 80 over on bearings. Then you've got the crank dimension. Then you've got the rear thrust, you know, if the, you know, on old cases, you know, they've been thrust cuts. So
right.
You've got all these different bearing combinations, and I don't think any company in VW industry could afford to make a bearing and keep all that in stock.
So really the go-to bearing is a standard bearing is the most valuable one that you're just trying to get.
Yeah. That's, we just got to, you know, focus on that and, you know, use new cases.
Now you said you built about 100 plus motors for Greg down there at Vintage Motor Cars. With building that many motors, I mean, that's got to keep you super busy. You know,
I work 7 days a week. You know, but I do, you know, I don't work really long hours so I don't burn myself out, but right. I've got a little program here in my shop. I've got, you know, I listen to the stereo. I have a giant screen TV. I've watched every Prime or Netflix movie, I think, in existence. But, you know, I just kind of chill and work at my own pace. And I get a lot of work done.
Well, you know, that's the thing with getting out there on your own. If you can set, if you can control your environment and build it the way that you want it, you know, it, you can become quite productive. There's a lot of distractions for us nowadays with all this social media. And every time you pick up your phone, there's three things on Facebook and one thing on Instagram and all these things. And it also changed the dynamics too as a business, right? It used to be advertising the magazine was the method as to how to get business. You know, I interviewed a guy from the UK that started Type 3 Detectives, and he put an ad in Volksworld, and next thing you know, he's just going gangbusters with the business. And that's kind of changed a little bit because you seem to get more traction from social media and, you know, just kind of industry specific stuff. You know what I mean? You can go on the, you can go on Facebook and find five different Volkswagen Facebook pages that have over 100,000 followers. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Social media is the game changer for advertising. Yeah. Magazines, you know, yeah, they're great. Yeah. I mean, you get to sit there and read them over and over, but really social media is the way to go. And you know what? It can make or break you also. If you don't do good work, people don't have a problem with going online and telling everybody. So it's, You gotta do good work.
It is definitely something that, you know, we've seen a lot of businesses that start up that they're just a social media presence, and next thing you know, it's they're not the same that they were. You know what I mean? They're not the same as every other business. So you'll see these names that come out of nowhere, and next thing you know, they look like they're selling gangbusters with parts stuff like that, and they might put out some low quality stuff. We talked about that with Russell from Old Speed a couple weeks ago, where there's just people in the VW world that I think us true enthusiasts really cringe at when somebody that's selling substandard stuff starts to get really popular, because the thing that negatively impacts the hobby is when people get excited to get in the Volkswagen scene and then they have a terrible experience because they bought bad parts from a guy who makes crap, or, you know, they kind of
get hoodwinked. I get calls on engines, and and 90% of the time I'll get questioned on my price, and then they'll say, well, this person can do it for this much money. And I just tell them, I'm like, you know what, if cost is an issue, then go ahead and go with someone else. I said, this is my price. I'm sorry. I invest a lot of time in my work. It's as perfect as I can make it with the best quality parts I can put in an engine. But a few times I've flat out told them, I said, you know, I've been in this game for a long time and I've talked to people just like you. And what's going to happen is you're going to have an engine failure and you're going to get really disappointed, and you're probably going to send that back. Hopefully they try to fix it. I said, you're eventually going to get out of VWs because you're frustrated. You've wasted your money and it's not going to be worth it for you anymore.
Yeah.
I said, and I'm not making this up, man. I've seen this. I've done this too long. So, everybody out there that's listening, you know, buy once, cry once. Don't really go after the cheapest thing.
Listen, I have a testament to that. And I know, you know, one of your friends slash rivals, Jake Raby, the Bull Run bus that I have, I bought a motor. I bought a Raby Type 4, and my philosophy behind it, I'm a big Type 4 fan. And it's always because it's always been like you can build a 2.3 liter with 90% German parts, right? That was the philosophy. And I bought that 2278s in a Bull Run bus. That motor I bought in 2001. That motor still to this day, I've never had the heads off of it. It's got thousands and thousands of miles. And everybody told me, you're crazy. You're paying $8,000 for a motor. That was turnkey motor, $8,000 in 2001. And people were just telling, but it was just like, my philosophy was like, well, I want to do it. I'm going to pay to get it done. And now clearly the same motor is probably $20,000 if you're buying that same.
Yeah. I'm going to start getting into Type 4s. I have one that I'm going to start building here about 4 weeks, and they aren't cheap to build anymore. $20,000, you know, is probably for a big Type 4 motor is about what they start at, honestly.
Yeah, and I was having this conversation with my buddy Adam Wick, and we were talking, and I kept talking about Type 4s, and I said, I understand that everybody said, you know, the downfall in the Type 4 is the cylinder head design, right? Now, there are people that are making billet cylinder heads that have a different exhaust port and stuff like that. But if you're talking, you want to build a motor that's got 150 horsepower, reliable, daily drivable, all those types of things, and uses as close to factory stuff as possible, it's going to be the Type 4, because just it's like the Chevy big block, right? It's just out of the gate, it's going to have more power because of its displacement.
Torque. They just make huge torque.
True. And talking on that, torque is what you feel when you're driving the car.
Absolutely. Everybody wants torque. You know, I love to build huge torque motors because they don't have to RPM real high. I'm not worried about the customer killing them with, you know, having to rev the engine to get the power out of it. So yeah, torque is what you want.
And that's another reason my Type 4s last as long as it has. I don't think I've ever revved that motor over 6,000 RPM max, even when I, you know, cause I'm pushing a big bus with it. And it's like, I love the feel and performance of that. And you, but then again, we're talking about scarcity of parts, Type 4 main bearings. Like, I mean, are those more common? Are those more readily available than Type 1 stuff? And then it's a whole nother world when you start going down the type 4 thing, you know? So
yeah, I mean, they're available, and I haven't seen the issues with the main bearings like the Type 1. Mostly I'm sure it's because the volume isn't so high with Silverline.
So you've got a product line now that you're selling. You've got the distributors that you sell. You go on your website, you get distributors, welded fans, the bearings and things like that. Is your plan to develop a few more part lines, specific stuff?
I just picked up my new crank pulleys. I'm going to next week release my pulley kit. It'll be an upper and lower pulley. Stainless steel crank pulley bolt, and I'll keep going here. Sorry, I'm kind of sidetracked. It'll have the alternator pulley nut, a belt, the sand seal assembly. It's going to be a whole kit. And you know, I was going to say one of the best things about owning your own business is just seeing a need for a part that nobody's making for some reason, like a crank pulley bolt. Nobody's making a really nice, high quality crank pulley bolt. They're all coming from China. That's what I wanted. I wanted a crank pulley bolt. So I was going to make it. I'm like, well, I might as well make my own crank pulleys too, because I don't really like the quality of the crank pulleys on the market. Mm-hmm. So everything kind of revolves around my engines. I need these for my engines. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll put them online. And if people are interested in them, I'll continue to make more. So, my interest really revolves around developing the best engine I can. And if I have to make my own parts to do that, I will. And then I'll sell them also. I hope that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I mean, if you're going to go through the painstaking process of like, I'm going to make this, I'm sure someone would want to buy them done, because you'll have a need for them. But if you've got them on the shelf, which is another one of those circumstances where when you're trying to get people to buy stuff, we all buy stuff so quickly online now. And if you've got them in stock and you're custom making them because you need them and you're going to offer them for sale too. No, it totally makes sense. You know, I mean, it's part of the package, right?
It is. And you know, down the road here, this year, hopefully I'll have my own crankshafts, connecting rods. What else am I working on? Oh, my own cylinder head. I'm working on developing a VW casting head that, you know, only a cylinder head guy would know about, you know, the changes I'm doing to improve it.
Right. I mean, how much more do you think the VW cylinder head could be improved? I mean, is the issue today, I mean, the design is the design, right? And short of a radical design change, I mean, we've seen it all, right? Overhead cams, we've seen people with, there was that crazy Hawaiian motor that had rods coming out of every orifice of the head, you know, four valves per cylinder. We've seen all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I'm trying to produce a cylinder head that can make more power easier. You know, valve guide. I don't want to go into a lot of what I'm doing
because
people are going to listen to this, but just things that should have been done a long time ago. But, you know, there's the follow the leader deal in the industry where, you know, people are just.
Yeah, that's what Joe's doing. Let's copy what Joe's doing and we'll just make those. We'll just make cheaper things than Joe makes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I don't follow people. I try to develop things that are my ideas and what I think is going to work. And, you know, this cylinder head casting is going to be a nice casting. The top two I think it's the top two guys. Well, out of the top three real street cars racing in the new class down in SoCal, mm-hmm. two of those cars are using my heads, and you know I just love it to see work I'm doing that's, you know, competing at a high level and winning. Tony Klink, you know, he just set the record with a set of my heads. So.
Yeah.
Now I'm not talking my new head casting. That's coming, but it will be an improvement over what Tony is currently using.
Yeah. Well, and talking about that, we touched on it last time a little bit. Do you ever think that direct injection would come into the VW world?
Man, I don't think so. Not on the air cooled stuff. You know, the expense to do it, you know, and I just don't think our fuel systems can support it. You know, what's the pressure of a direct injection motor? Isn't it over 100 PSI, 200? Yeah, I'm not sure.
It's pretty high. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's going to run a fuel system that can support that kind of pressure, I don't think. But
well, yeah. It's just common rail direct fuel injection systems are 29,000 PSI. So I was off by
a they're that high.
I was off by a couple zeros. Yeah. But it's interesting because, you know, obviously Porsche went to water cooled because they developed the air cooled as far as they thought they could take it from an efficiency standpoint. Now, us VW guys were stuck doing things the way we're doing with the platform that we have. And really, if you really take into consideration getting a motor to get 150 horsepower, you know, three times the factory horsepower and having it be daily driver reliable is a pretty, we've come a long way in the complete aftermarket world, right? Because Volkswagen never produced a flat four that had over 60 horsepower for the Type 1, you know?
Yeah.
So there's been a lot with that. Now, touching a little bit on racing, because you brought that up, there's the guys in Real Street, some of the guys in Real Street, you said, are running some of your cylinder heads. And I've noticed, I've been trying to get out there to see the races a little bit more. I just got back from, we ran into each other down there at drag day. But how do you think the drag racing world could become a little bit more involved? Like, people could be a little more involved with supporting it and seeing it, because that's really, I mean, ultimately the spectators are what make it viable for people to set up drag races. So,
Well, I think, I honestly think that drag racing has gotten, as far as car count, has improved. You know, I got to give, Jeff Kramarczyk some credit with what he's doing up north. He is just one incredible promoter, and puts companies on a pedestal online with what he does. And Jeff Newcomb, you know, he's another, he does a good job. So, you know, and the payouts, I think there's finally, people are realizing that it's expensive to race these cars and you have to come up with some bigger payouts to get the cars to show up. And it looks, I mean, I know JK is coming up with a lot of purse money and it's real appealing to make his events.
Yeah, no. That's one of the big things for the racers, especially to get them to go long distances, especially with where they're at. They're so far up north. It's like they're so far out of the orange curtain to get people out there. It takes a good draw, but it's really the dedicated racers that are going to that. Now, there's the big talk of the show that's going to be happening here in December.
The Vegas show.
I've seen one blurb about it. I haven't seen a bunch else. But, you know, it looks like it's happening. And what are you planning to be at this event?
Yes. I'm not sure yet. I haven't done a lot of research on it. If it's quarter mile or eighth mile.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Do you know?
Well, there are a lot of details that are still that have not been hammered out yet. I know that our track here can do both. It's set up as a quarter mile track. And the weekend that it's booked for is there's another event going on that weekend, and I don't know if they're piggybacking the event, but the Race of Champion World Finals is what they're calling it. And as far as I don't think they've got their classes and stuff set up. I'm hoping to see something happening with this where we get a little more detail on the stuff. But now,
I hope it's eighth mile because that's the platform that everybody's kind of moved to today. I mean, I love quarter mile, but I've raced eighth mile for so many years now. I kind of developed my whole program around it, and I'll go no matter what. But I'm hoping that they run eighth mile at that event.
Now, speaking of running your car eighth mile, you were just at the Texas race there.
Oh my God. No, I don't know if I'm going to talk about that.
how was that? How was the experience of that race over there? What's your feedback on that?
Well, I'm going to tell you that Extreme Raceway Park is without a doubt the nicest track facility I've ever raced at.
Really?
It's incredible. It's all concrete, everything, pits. It was amazing. The track prep, I've never seen a track prep like that before in my life.
Really?
It was, Jason Pointer and Clint Cox. They did an outstanding job. You know, the track crew worked with them, and those two guys are onto something with that event. I had one of my worst racing days between a brand new truck breaking down on the way there, catching the flu, third gear issues with the gearbox. I was racing with 103 degree fever. It was awful. And, you know, I lost in the finals. The car didn't go in third. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of people saw the little war with my competitor on social media, which, you know, we were talking about being a business owner. I can't do that kind of stuff anymore. You know, it reflects back on me, and I got to be more professional. I can't let my emotions, you know, if you're a competitor, if that's in your blood, then losing is hard on you. And I will tell you, I hate to lose, like Moneyball, that movie. I hate to lose more than I like to win.
Yeah.
It just bothers me. And it can get the best of me, especially if I'm being kind of prodded, and I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
I'm better than that.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the thing, right? You go through this whole, you put your program together, and that's kind of the thing where you display your performance and all that kind of stuff, and you take it real personal, you know, people, and that's where we've kind of gotten to online, right? Like, people feel really comfortable saying things that they wouldn't say directly to you because they've got the filter of the internet. So it's one of those things where it's tough to be tempered and just say, you know what, I'm just going to save it for the track. Everybody has a bad day. It is, you know, it is what it is, and we're just going to move forward from there. You know,
yep. You cannot win every race. No. You're going to lose races. You're going to have bad days. The great Bill Taylor told me years ago, he said, you can't win a drag race without some sort of luck during the event. And that was, you know, I'm like, I don't know. But, you know, looking back now, he's right. Anybody that wins a race, they look back and they're like, man, if this would have happened, I would have lost that round or this or that. And it's true. You know, it takes some luck. It takes misfortune from the other driver. You know, that's racing. You know, you're not going to win every one.
Well, and it was funny, when, you know, I went up there, and my career of drag racing was the one race I did up in Medford with my red drag bug that used to belong to Chris Cox. And my prep time on it was just pulling the car cover off and putting it on the trailer. So I went out to go have fun. And I remember Doug Berg tells me, he says, you're just racing yourself, Bill. Don't worry about the other guy. You just got to focus on you, because you get so hyped up thinking about so many other things. And your job as racing is just to be as consistent as you are from shifting to revving to everything else. And it's really hard. It's like golf, right? Like, you think you got it figured out. You know, I've gone golfing on occasion and it's like, oh, this hitting a ball that's not moving seems pretty easy. And I just got to hit it the same every time. You know what I mean?
Yep. And then it kicks your ass and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. I was just kidding. You get one good hit and you're all of a sudden or one good pass and you're thinking, I've got this thing figured out now. And then the next pass just goes to hell in a handbasket, you know?
Yeah. Well, a nice thing now is my son is going with me, and you know, that's, you know, having family there with me, taking a part of it, it's awesome. My wife Amy has not gone to the last, I think, four races with me, and I've done horrible ever since. So I told her, I said, this year I don't care what you're going with me to the races, because I don't seem to do well without you there. So she's going to be with me this year for most of the events.
Yeah. No, it's you know, you got your plate full, because you're going to be drag racing. You've got your business. You've got to take, and it's also your passion. It's what you do, you know?
Yeah. And that's the hardest thing. You know, I was talking to Tony Klink and I'm like, man, I said, I'm trying to come up with time to work on my car, but the business. And he said, yeah, he said, it's hard and you can't let your business suffer because of it. So, you know, where I got into trouble here this past year was just testing. You know, I haven't had the time to go out and do testing before an event. Like, if I would have tested the car before going to Texas, I would have found out that the third gear slider had issues and it would have been resolved. And, you know, I'm not saying I would have won that event, but I wouldn't have had that problem.
Right, right. So,
yeah, testing, I have to make the time for testing.
Yeah. No, there's so much to it, and it's all gotta just land perfectly right to have a good day at the track. And for guys to do that, experience that, and then come back every time doing it again, it's a testament to the guys at race, because it's your best days and your worst days out there, right?
Yeah, it is. But hey, before I forget, I want to wish Alex Curry from Ohio congratulations on winning that event. We had some back and forth stuff on the internet, but you know what? He went A to B every round, and he won that event, and he won it. He deserved the win. So, Alex, just want to tell you congratulations.
Well, that's cool. And that's real sportsmanship, right? Is like being able to thank the guy that beat you, you know? Now, speaking of that, what class were they running out there? What class were you running out there? And is it the same class you run all the time?
I raced in Pro Stock, which and it seems like there's been a new interest in Pro Stock. I think we're going to have Pro Stock back on the West Coast. Tony Klink has got his notch back now. Joe Maestas is building a Pro Stock. I hear Tony Klink's brother, Mike Klink, is coming out with a Pro Stock. Sean Gears now has one. Who else? I think there's one more person I'm forgetting, but and now, yeah, I think we're going to have Pro Stock back on the West Coast here in the next year or two.
And for the non heavily involved drag racers like myself, what designates a car to be Pro Stock? What is the qualification for a Pro Stock car?
Well, there's, you know, we all go off the EC PRA Pro Stock rules, but there's a pound per cubic inch rule. It can be a chassis car or a pan car.
Is it car? Is it open as far as performance? Could be turboed, could be anything, or is
no, it's no, it's no, it's naturally aspirated only. You can have EFI or carburetors. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of rules as far as wing height and all that. But it's a normally aspirated class only. No power adders.
And what right now is the time that class is running? What kind of times are they putting down?
Well, I still have the ET record with the EC PRA. I ran a 590 with a one at Farmington, I think, in 2015. So that record still stands. Damon Harmon has the mile-an-hour record at that same event. He went like 117.85, I think. I was right below that, 117, like 30, but he took the mile-an-hour record. I'm sure that record is going to drop over the next few years. You know, there's some heavy hitters coming into Pro Stock. Sean, I mean, we all know what Sean's capable of. Joe Maestas has Jay Schumacher as his tuner engine builder, and Jay's a brilliant, brilliant person. So, yeah, Jay asked me last month what I thought Pro Stock was going to get down to as far as ET, and I think we'll be in the 570s here in the next couple of years.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, that 570 is super fast because you're going to be pushing 120 mile an hour. So you're talking 0 to 120 in 6 seconds.
It's fast for an aspirated car.
That's, you know, fast. That's fast, period. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's definitely pretty amazing what the Volkswagen community has gotten into being able to produce, you know, with again, the same platform, air cooled, all that stuff, and just taking the same really antiquated technology and just keep refining it and refining it and refining it up until we get to a point where, I mean, these cars are going 0 to 100 and, you know, pretty much 0 to 120 in 6 seconds. I mean, it's pretty incredible. And I'm excited for the guys that are doing it. But I often think to myself, you know, cause we see recently had interviews with the guys that are doing the drag and drive events. And we had Chuck Fryer on here and a lot of those guys. And those guys are running in the 12s. And then I just ran into, when I was down there at Drag Day, I ran into Steve Dalton and Steve Weidman. And we got to talking about their car, you know, and he's running that turbo
car. Yeah, that's an incredible car.
It's running 950s, I think it ran, which is insane. Cause you're talking no wheelie bars, no any of that stuff, you know, and they,
yeah, and he's got to drive it to the event.
Yeah. That's
harder than setting a record in Pro Stock. I'll tell you that for sure. Trying to keep something like that alive.
Well, and the thing is, again, you know, I think it goes back to the turbo, the difference with the turbo makes, right? Cause you can have the motor be a little bit civilized off of boost to some extent, and then you're just throwing everything at it when you're wide open throttle. So I just did a motor. We just upgraded a motor. I had a little 1800 that I have in my chop top, and we just put a supercharger on it. And I picked up a supercharger kit out of the UK that's similar to ones that Rabobank does and Joe Blow in Australia. And they're the little AMR 500 supercharger for the Subarus that they have in Japan. And I tell you, I put that on that 1800cc motor. It feels like a 2 liter when I drive it. It's got a linear power curve that just like, it's straight through, smooth right off of idle. And I think it's around like 7 pounds of boost. And for me, I'm thinking it's the greatest thing since sliced bread for a sub 1900cc motor that you want to get big performance out of, you know?
That's awesome.
I've been really impressed with that. Have you messed with any of those those little small supercharger setups yet?
No, years ago, I messed with one of the Dick Landy superchargers at CB. But I don't know what happened with that project. We didn't really pursue it much.
I mean, the bigger problem, I think, with the supercharger setups is they're definitely, for my bug, I had to put standoffs on the deck lid, but it fit under the deck lid. But, you know, the whole kit was $2,000. For the kit.
Yeah, that's nice.
And I put it on, you know, I took my dual, you know, this was a classic Berg engine, 1800 machine in 88 to 74. And I took the 42 DCNFs off. It was low compression, like 7-1. I put that supercharger on there and it goes like stink now. I mean, it's pretty impressive. And I think with technologies like power adders, turbochargers, I think for street performance, if you're trying to get good performance and have a streetable car, I think turbo setup is the way to go. You know what I mean? For you, drag racing, you guys, everybody's in that class where it's like, how good can you get this motor tuned? You know, which is with carburetors.
The cool thing about a supercharger is you don't have the oil temp to deal with. That's the problem with turbocharged street engines, is controlling the oil temp, because that oil is going through that hot turbo.
Right.
And, you know, you just, it's almost a losing battle trying to control the oil temp on a turbo motor. But with a supercharged engine, you don't have that issue.
No, it's completely self-contained. I think I've seen the superchargers online. You can buy like on Temu or whatever for like $150, because they're all reman superchargers. But these guys out of Compressor House, they make a complete kit. And I saw it on their display at Volksworld last year. It's almost a year to the day. And I saw it and I said, you know what? I'm going to buy one of these for that 1600 net limo bus that I have. Then I had it sitting on the shelf for a few months. I'm like, screw it. Let's throw this on the chop top and take the Burt.
Well, I'm interested in getting one now. I didn't know about it. Maybe you could send me a link. I'd like to look into it.
I'm telling you, for me, and I've had big motors, I've had type fours, I've had 48 motors. This was the one thing, because I remember I took back in the day, I had a 1914 and I had a Turbo City single side draft draw through setup. And then I switched to the CB. And I went to the CB fuel injected setup, and there were two different cars with two different transmissions, but I dynoed both setups, and the dyno on my draw through setup was 106 horse and it was 142 torque. Well, I put the EFI CB setup did not feel as powerful on the dyno. It was 157 horse and 175 torque, which was the difference. Same motor, just going from draw through to CB fuel injected. Mm-hmm. But again, the CB EFI setup, you're for $4,000, I think, at least the minimum for a setup like that, maybe more.
It's gotten really expensive. I'm not saying CB, but just turbo, EFI turbos in general is, you know, I just became a fuel tech dealer, and you know, it's expensive to go EFI. Yeah.
And so the thing with the supercharger setup is it's tiny, it's compact, it sits on the motor, fits in front of the fan shroud. And I'll send you some info on it. And that's carburetor, everything to install it was $2,200, which was
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I thought, like, this thing is you know, they're all remanufactured superchargers, but the cool thing is they're self-contained. There's no oil plumbing to do. And my thought was like anything sub 1900, it's the best bang for your buck. You know, like you,
any idea the power it added? Did you ever put it on the dyno?
I have not dynoed it, and I didn't do a before and after dyno, but talking to these guys in the UK that build the kit, they say it's about 40 to 50 horsepower, depending on the setup.
Well, that's for, okay. So 50 horsepower for $2,200, I think you said.
Yeah. It's not a bad
deal. Yeah. You can't beat that.
Well, and especially when you're talking about everybody's goal about buying motors and driving motors is they want daily drivability. They want all these things. And it took us, my brother and I, installing it about 4 hours to install the kit. So it's definitely, it's those jumps in technology where it's like this supercharger that is made in Japan, you know, that somebody brought over here and started putting on the Volkswagen motors. If you get it set up right, man, I mean, that was with a brand new side draft carburetor, everything. And I was, you know, I felt like I got a really good value for what I did. And it so far I've put a lot of miles in that car. The problem is I go through gas like crazy because when you taste that power, it's easy to turn it on.
You can't keep your foot out of it.
I'm telling you, you can't. And it's crazy. So I'm excited, even in this hobby that I've been in for 30 years, that I look at and think like, man, they're still coming out with a little tweak here and a little tweak there that makes it more fun, more engaging, more involved. You know, what somebody needs to come up with, and I'm speaking for the type 3 people, is some sort of under deck lid turbo or supercharger setup that works to power up these small little type 3 motors that gets them running. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just so you're so limited on space.
That's the issue. And then I start thinking like the Corvettes where they've got turbos in the rear by the exhaust and they run the piping all the way up. And, you know, so there's ways to do it. Again, it's one of those things where we're in a hobby where a lot of people just copy what Joe did last. And they just try to make the same thing cheaper and put their little twist on it versus like what you're saying. When you're looking at cylinder heads, you're going a clean slate. Like, what could I do to make this head perform better? I don't care what anybody's done. What could I do from my experience? Which I think it's pretty awesome. And I'm excited to see what you have coming up. So when do you think some of your product line will start hitting, like your crankshafts, your rods and the cylinder heads?
Probably the cranking rods, end of the year. I'm developing that right now. The cylinder head, is going to be a little bit longer. I've got the sample done. I'm not sure if I want to have it done in CAD or if I just want to use the... I'm old school, you know. I'll take a head and I'll modify it and use that as my sample. But,
right.
You know... But I have some another couple projects I'm working on that I have to get done before I pursue my cylinder head. So and I think the head will be 2025 before I release it.
That's exciting, man. I'm glad to see people pushing, you know, trying to push the envelope, do things a little bit different. And it's there's more than enough business for everybody out there, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to be a huge company. I want to be able to, you know, make a living and, you know, have an awesome product. And, you know, I don't need to be rich. I guess I don't have the best business philosophy that big companies do, but, you know, I would rather be comfortable and have a really good name in the industry and just give people a really good product.
No, that's the most important thing, you know, when we're in a hobby that nobody needs to do, but we do it because we're passionate about it and you want to spend your money and get the most you can out of your spending. It's good to be able to go to people that have a good reputation, that stand behind their work, that do what they say they're going to do. So that's important. And I know you've got a great reputation in the industry. You've been around for years. You've got thousands of motors, I would have to guess, in your past to substantiate kind of your credibility. And it's exciting to see that you've been in the game this long, you're not burnt out, you're not angry, because it happens to a lot of people that have been in this industry for so long, you know, that just kind of, it wears on them. And to be able to maintain a positive attitude and stay focused and trying to bring something better to the industry, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I was getting burned out, and opening up my own company just like rejuvenated me. I'm having a ball. I'm having so much fun. It's just, it's incredible. Every day I tell my wife, I'll ask her, I said, did you ever think that we would be in this position? And she always tells me, yes, I knew you would, but, you know,
she's a great cheerleader.
Yeah. My wife is awesome, man. And I couldn't do this without her support. There's no way this Pat Downs Performance would exist without my wife and my kids, you know, because when I was building this place, I wasn't home very often, and my wife, without her, man, I don't know what I would have done. Or, you know, or I got a great family. That's all I'll say.
No, that's awesome, man. Well, I'm excited. I'm glad that things are going great for you. I really enjoy whenever we get to catch up and just chat for a few minutes. You know, you're always a positive, upbeat guy. It's always interesting to see, you know, what's happening in the industry, and I'm glad you're still a part of it, man. And anytime when your new stuff comes out, ring me up. Let's tell the podcast world what you're putting down and where they can get it and all that good stuff. Cause I love to see people that love the hobby get supported by those that are enthusiasts. So thanks for,
I appreciate that. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, no. And any way people want to get in touch with you, there's your website, which is patdownsperformance.com. And
yeah, they can email me, call me, just whatever. You know, I won't answer my phone usually after 5 o'clock, and I'm going to go home and spend time with the family. But, you know, I try to answer emails in the evenings as best as I can.
Well, good deal. Well, Pat, thanks for coming on. I know you're busy. I know you got some stuff stacked up behind us, so I'll let you get going. But thanks for coming on, letting us get caught up with what's new with Pat Downs and your new venture, Pat Downs Performance. And all the best of luck to you, my friend.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, Pat.
Okay, take care.
Well, if you like that podcast, make sure you share this podcast with all your friends. And if there's things that you want for me to ask Pat next time we get him on the podcast, because I'm sure he'll be back on here again, send me an email at bill@letstalkdubs.com. If you've got any future guests or people you think stories interesting, things to that extent that you think you might want to hear about on Let's Talk Dubs or share with the world, feel free to email me at bill@letstalkdubs.com. I'm excited for lots of stuff coming up. We've got so much stuff to bring you guys. And I couldn't do it without you guys for supporting the podcast. So I appreciate anytime you guys go to the podcast, support, picking up some merch, supporting the podcast any way that you can. Share it with your friends, because I love when you share the podcast. Go subscribe to George T's YouTube channel, The Wagon. And until next week, guys, later.
You probably don't know that there's a new Volkswagen out that doesn't look like a Volkswagen.